Hello friends, this is Events Demystified, brought to you by Trifun Events, and I'm your host, Anka. If you didn't get the memo, we are rolling with an updated name to our podcast this year after some soul searching this past winter. Well, either that or the fact that we've realized that for the past 15 episodes or so, we've been dicing and slicing the world of virtual events, and moving into 2021, we will be doing a whole lot of the same for a while, as well as mincing hybrid events in there too, as we truly believe that's the future of events as we know it. And so this focus on virtual and hybrid events has called for a more appropriate podcast name, which in itself turned out to be quite a hard task. And so to keep things somewhat familiar with our current dedicated audience, we came up with the most obvious and tried alternative: Events Demystified. And so welcome to our second episode this month. And on that, I know for the majority of our time on air, we produced one episode a month, which was manageable and great. But this year, I'm attempting and hoping to air out 2 episodes a month to add more value to all of you, our devoted listeners. So make sure to subscribe on your favorite listening platform to keep updated with all of our new episodes. There are only very few roles more important in event production than the role of a producer. Event producers are responsible for so much, essentially planning and coordinating all event activities on behalf of their clients, from initial client meetings, virtually or in person, wherever you're located and how that works for you, which basically determine plans and budget, to selecting the format of the event, the technology, the production elements, and the personnel to run the event. The producer is involved in every event, every step of the way. Show production has a lot of moving parts, and as you've learned in virtual events, adding the technology aspect to all of that, it just complicates things a little bit. And so a producer's role includes many things, but at the end of the day, our job is to help bring our clients' ideas to reality, may that be for live in-person events, virtual or hybrid. And so diving into the role of a producer for events and seeing things from a producer's perspective, today I have the pleasure of catching up with Timothy Blackton, former senior event producer at Nike World Headquarters in Oregon, where he planned, coordinated, and performed world-class live productions, and where he also worked with mentionable clients such as KFC, Cole Haan, Converse, North Face, Adidas, Freightliners, among others. He's a creative producer, director, writer, and actor on a fun independent short film entitled Tex, Behind the Scene of the People Behind the Scene, a very refreshing and hilarious comedy that first screened last fall at Portland Comedy Film Festival, where it earned a Best Comedy Film Award nomination. He currently lives in Portland, Oregon with his wife Tammy and his four-legged friends. In his spare time, he enjoys skiing, golf, camping, and classic cars. Tim and I crossed paths numerous times in the world of live events many years ago when I was still back in Oregon, Portland, Oregon, and we had quite the laugh recalling those times, and when, obviously, I couldn't miss the opportunity to finally share with him my very first impression of him as we were both working on a Nike event back in the days. You have to listen all the way to the end to hear the endearing term I used to describe him during that first encounter. Today, we will go behind the scenes and talk about events from a producer's standpoint. We'll cover producing and management styles that empower your team, how to deal with an event that goes sideways, what makes for a great team, especially in the context of independent contractors and freelancers, and of course, tips for personal well-being in a challenging industry. Hello, Timothy. It's so good to have you on the show with me today. And it's been a pleasure when we've met virtually. We are talking about our first time we got into each other's way, and I'm not going to repeat. what I said.
Day. Yeah, and remember what I said, which was you had it all dialed in. There was little for me to do.
We are not going to say that. We're just going to skip straight into, how are you?
I'm well. I'm surviving my best. You surviving?
Absolutely. But I wanted to just get a little bit of overview of your year. How has it been treating you? I mean, I've seen and heard so many different narratives of what 2020 meant to people. So I want to hear your version of the story.
Yeah, 2020 started off exciting because I had left my job, my corporate job doing events for Nike after 15 years in January of 2020, and proceeded to just be able to jump right back into work freelancing. And then 2 months later, it all just disappeared. And so it's been a bit of hibernation, a bit of rebuilding year in a sense, and coming out of this at this point, happier than I've ever been in a while. So doing things that really spark joy, as it were. So life is not terrible.
That is good. Thinking of the timing of you wanting to embrace this new freedom of a independent event producer and the timing of it, beginning of 2020, couldn't have been better, right?
It was just like, wow, it was so crazy. And that's what, you know, to watch it adapt and to watch it evolve and to figure out how it moves, because people always are going to want to congregate in one way or another. Watching people unable to connect so much is really the saddest thing, really, because I think we're all social beings. And as event planners and people, we throw parties. We like to have celebrations generally. So, you know, to miss out that on a day-to-day basis, to watch people have that interaction and be part of that, that's a bummer. You know, and I can't wait till we can all come back together at some point.
Absolutely. I bet you had a little bit of that FOMO, fear of missing out, where like everybody's doing something. And now that I'm not part of Nike, and Nike can throw some parties.
Yeah. We did, sure. Definitely. And their whole model's changed now. It's all it's all VCs. It's all Zooming right now. I don't know quite when the campus is going to get back up and rolling. They're slowly kind of bringing it back online. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the amount of events that Nike did changed as I was there. They went from fewer large events to one like really big event per year kind of model. So it always kept changing as to how it would all roll. But yeah, through some good parties. That's for sure.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the role that you played there as a season event producer, and just a little bit of a background for our audience that is new at all these terms. You know, it's like, you know what an event planner does, but what does an event producer do? Do you want to talk a little bit about what your role was and how did it play out in your day-to-day job, basically?
So the day job as a senior event producer for Nike, I partner with the event planner to manage all the technical aspects of a given production. So whether that's the lighting, the sound, video, power, logistics, partnering with them to any aspect of a event production, events themselves, you become involved in on the Nike campus of all parts of the event, from the load in to just getting it out of the building. It becomes a process. The team there developed a really close-knit way of working, because we were constantly churning events over every day, where some event rooms at some venues might finish on a Thursday and not play again until Sunday. We would finish on a Thursday afternoon and have something else coming in Thursday night. So it was a constant rotation of events after events after events. So you're managing multiple events. So by working with the planner, the event planner, you're taking on the role of logistics. And at the same time, they still want your critical creative input. Yeah. So there's a nice balance that way. So as much as you're doing the technical stuff of checking all the boxes and making sure all the right people are in the right role, as the process is going, you have to give creative input because of maybe limitations of the space. Somebody says, well, I want to do this, and you have to drive them down to this. Yeah. So that part of it just made it a constantly dynamic job, constantly changing. So by the end of it, you would almost look at yourself as in LA right now in the film business, they have these showrunners who just answer questions all day to make stuff happen. Good event planners and good event producers are like showrunners. Mm-hmm. They know all the answers, and they're very clear that every day somebody's going to come at them with questions after questions after questions. And you have to be able to answer those questions confidently and efficiently from everybody. You got to be able to talk to, you know, if you've got stylists, to the lighting person, to audio. You're the wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. You're the hub of this giant wheel of communication, and make sure everybody does what they need to do. Because mm-hmm. I love audio folks, but boy, sometimes it's like, you got to stop doing what you're doing and let me do.
I'm not going to take that personal.
You absolutely should. And then, you know, video, you got video guys that'll tweak forever. But then you go up to the video guy who's looking at a pixel in the corner. And as an event producer, you go up and you look at it and you go, yeah, they're absolutely right. They need to fix that. And you quality check the work and it's all there.
I love the fact that, you know, you basically mentioned that as an event producer, not only that you supervise and coordinate all aspects of an event, and I mean all yeah. aspects of an event,
all aspects
from conception to execution, but you also are part of the developing concepts and ideas. And that's where the creative part mm-hmm. comes in. And then you're overseeing operations, and then you're directing staff and coordinating yeah. all the technical and production elements of the event. It almost makes you wonder, like, what doesn't a producer, event producer, do in that case?
Responsible for everything, right? And held accountable for it. Because they say, we're trusting you to give us all these parts, and you have to supply those parts and make sure that they run well. And when I say parts, I mean people, equipment, all of it. And so you're the conduit to make that happen. Because I love AV guys and gals. They're awesome. They go very deep in their channels. But sometimes talking to clients, it goes too deep. So you want to be that buffer to give everyone a voice and allow everyone to be heard, because clients will want something and you have to convey that message to the techs in a way that they understand exactly what the client wants.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you're very much right there. I've only met very few people that have been able to easily transition from a tech role, like, you know, sound engineer or video producer or video director or lighting right. designer, into the event planner, project manager type of role, event producer role, yeah. and do that well. Because, I mean, when you're in your head doing your craft, doing the best at your skill that you could, it's a very focused place that you're in. And yeah. honestly, the last thing you want to do is just talk left and right. And many times, like when I was on my event, live events, you know, as an event producer, my job was to make sure that there's no client coming to the tech table to talk to them. And they would always come to me in a way as to protect my techs from straining themselves into things like, I don't want to talk to the client. Please keep them away from me because I really want to focus on what I need to do. And right. that was sort of like, I'm now the protector of my guys to make sure right. that they get their stuff done based on everything that we plan and talked about, but I'll yeah. take care of the client. And the client is yeah. happy in this transaction now because they don't have to go and deal with, you know, an attitude that you're like, oh my gosh, did you hear how, you know.
Exactly. And here's the thing is at Nike, we allowed the techs to integrate directly with the clients. Mm-hmm. And that was a big part of, there's a certain level of AV tech that's at Nike. Mm-hmm. It's the customer service level of AV tech that, you know, that gets lost a lot of times and happens all the time. You can't always be in the room with the tech, but you want to be able to trust that that tech is listening to the client, understanding the client's needs, fulfilling the client's needs, and then hopefully exceeding the client's needs. And at Nike, we were very diligent about making sure the techs did that level, because a lot of times they're left on their own to do yeah. that.
So moving into my next question here, you know, event production definitely has a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that can be overwhelming or quite distracting to some clients. Yet at the same time, I have some clients that really like to get into the details of how we create this production schedule, the show flows, the cue sheets. What does it really go into pulling a production off? How much do you tell, or how much did you used to tell your clients about all the effort that was going behind the scene?
I was fortunate at Nike to have clients that understood what it takes to do this. A lot of times, the client's boss who was presenting wouldn't get that. So we would schedule rehearsals and nobody would show up, and then they'd have a terrible show. They learn that once and then they go, oh, we need to rehearse. So I was real fortunate to have clients who were geeky enough and nerdy enough and heady enough to love all the AV tech. And I'm always open to share that with anybody. You throw them right into it, go, this is what it all is. And they go, oh, okay, I probably don't want to deal with that. But we're also the AV geeks, right? We're doing what we love to do. Everybody kind of wants to be us, really, right? I remember being an AV on a show, a road show in 2005 in the back of a hotel ballroom with a bunch of AV Intel type programmers and all that kind of stuff. And they all loved me at the back of the room. I had my laptops and a soundboard and they were like, "You're having fun." I'm like, "Yes, I am." So, you know, we're doing live events. It's a party. It's an event. It should be for the client, any fears that they have, any trepidations that they have. My job as a producer hopefully has taken that away from them, that I have put them at ease, that I'm not stressing out about any of this. You know, events, they do them, maybe they do one a quarter, one a year. You know, you do them every day. I did them every day. So I chose not to be stressed through the process and allow the client to have faith that I'm not freaking out. And I never did. That's where you put a client, make them happy about what you're doing. I don't know if I even answered your question or if I went away to hold it. So.
Well, basically the question was, how much do you really tell your client what happens behind the scenes? I feel like some clients, they want to know everything, where others are like, "I don't care, just do your magic and, you know, just make sure that the event goes right. I just want to make sure that everything that goes and it's according to the plan that we created based on that run of show." You know?
It's going to be different for everybody. And you got to understand their motives. Like, they may say, "I need to know everything that's going on," because they're reporting up to somebody who has asked them to be very diligent about what's what. You kind of got to give and take a little bit of it, I think. You got to reveal a little bit of the curtain, for sure, behind the curtain. But also at the same time, if they're not interested, then great, you got room to fly.
Yeah, I think the way that translates, especially these days in the virtual event production world, is that if the client doesn't really know that there's a process and there is certain things that have to happen prior to the event date, especially now that they can see the tech table, all those warming techs doing their thing, the client assumes that, well, here's your content, you're just going to smack your fingers and it's going to happen and the event is going to go smoothly. And there's no other thing needed for me, where that couldn't be farther away from the truth. Like, I feel like one of the biggest challenges these days is explaining to the client how content, when we create those content deadlines, we're really serious and strict about those because there is a process. There is all this extra work that goes into creating your event, even though now it's virtual and it's not in person, but we're creating this show for you, which it has all, you know, the overlays, the graphics, the titles,
all of
that has to be included in this event. You can't just, you know, zoom in. I mean, sure, like, we're doing this over Zoom, but it's like, there's no titles, there's nothing, there's no graphics, there's nothing.
It's raw footage.
It's as raw as you can get.
I think with clients like that, the one thing that would be good to implement would be dates and gates. That you just have to say early on in the process, early on in your contract negotiations, stipulate really early on that 48 hours before the event, all graphics are locked, which you know that it's going to take them till 24 hours to get you what you need, right?
Yeah.
So that's the best way to do it, and charge them for it. You put money where your mouth is and it'll change their philosophy. That's something we didn't do at Nike. So we were doing last minute changes consistently and absurdly too. I remember once we had opened the doors to the house and we were 3 minutes from a show and a client come in and want to change a PowerPoint and wanted to grab images from the web. I stopped her and I just said, "No, you can only pick from what you've got here on the deck. And you've got a minute to do it because we're about to start the show." And it was the client, but she had been pushing and pushing and pushing too far. And at that point, you're done. The client has to step back and just watch the show. I can't allow to make a change like go to the web. And the minute she did her thing, she was gone. She was happy. We were good. The video guy turned to me and just said, "Thank you." Because sometimes you don't stop people like that. You start grabbing stuff from the web, which I wasn't going to do. But I gave her at least something. You're not going to shut it down completely. You're going to say, "You can work with what you have downloaded on this machine right now and go for it. I'm not pulling anything else crazy." You're making a halfway compromise.
I mean, the best scenario is obviously when you have all your content saved, but don't you love it when you have one of those clients that tells you, "Oh, here's the link to that YouTube video that we want to play. Can you just pull it up, you know, on the screen?"
All the time.
No.
No. And then luckily at Nike, we had legal behind us who had said, "You can't do any of that." So like we were just like, "Nope, can't do it." And legal says so. So saved us, because that's always the worst. I mean, really, like, here's a YouTube link. You're like, "Oh,
Exactly. And you're like, do you want some commercial coming up that you really don't want part of your event?
How embarrassing
would that be?
Right. Savvy clients learn real fast the level of professionalism it takes.
Yeah.
Now, you know, when you look at a VC like this between you and I or what have you, and you're at, you know, sometimes if it's a live event, now you got somebody who's got to switch the event. You've got maybe somebody who's coloring the event. You've got cameras going. You know, it takes that village that they don't see now, that it takes this kind of work to do a really good VC.
Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifan Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifan Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. To find out how Trifan Events can plan and produce your event become memorable, go to trifanevents.com.
Going back to this, you know, run of show flow, production cue sheet, cue to cue, I mean, whatever you decide to call it, because everybody calls it somewhat differently.
Yeah.
At what point would you say a event producer gets involved in this process?
At a certain point, you're sometimes managing the run of show, right? So you're obviously putting together that document. Sometimes the client will have their own stuff and you're going to integrate it with your tech folks so you can hand stuff off as best you can. The hope is that at a certain point, depending on the level and size of the production, you're going to have a technical director who's going to call the show or a show caller. And then that really, I really allow them to really create a run of show that works best for how they call a show and how it goes to crewing. One thing, I have a theater background. I have a degree in stage management. Mm-hmm. So I weirdly, when I call a corporate show, will give warnings and readies, which a lot of folks don't do. They just kind of like, hey, break go lights, here we go, blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of loose. I like to be a little more focused with that just to give people a heads up. But I also got in a way of running shows that just became sometimes literally just a print up of the PowerPoint.
Yeah.
And how are we going to go and manage it that way? A lot of times the level of crew that I was working with was pretty top rate that I could give them a run of show and they go, I don't really care. You're going to tell me what to do anyway. You know, so it was always weird to print up new run of shows and just have a crew go, thanks. You know, I'm already tuned into what we're doing. That's the thing is you get a crew that's just tuned into what's happening that day for them because tomorrow they could be on something else where you're, as the producer, carrying that event from day to day to day.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of times what happened for me, because I was managing so many events at any given time, that the day of the event, I would hand it over to the crew and a technical director and then literally step away and be managing other things, getting prepared for other things and staying on the peripheral of what was going on for availability, but not necessarily in the room. And that's trusting your crew and your clients' needs. But if you're a good producer, you put all the right people in the right place, most of your work is done. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. In my experience, the producer, it was basically my responsibility to communicate the client's goals into something that my production team could understand. Mm-hmm. And that included, you know, the technical director, the video director. Sometimes, you know, I would either step into the technical director role or the video director would step into that role. The show caller could switch hats depending on the production level. You know, sometimes you end up like doing all the roles, whatever it takes, right?
Yeah.
And it was actually one of my biggest pleasures to be able to hand off the reins of the cue sheet of this run of show to my show caller, knowing once I got on site, knowing that I trust them fully and I don't have to micromanage any of that. And, you know, there's many changes that could happen in the tech rehearsal and it could be challenging to be in all places at all times, but having the support of your team and knowing that they are there to support you as much as you support them is so important. It's almost like this dance that you go back and forth and communication is so important. At the end of the day, you know, you must trust your team because once you do know that you're solid, if you step into that room knowing that, well, this is not my A team. This is like, who knows what's going to happen, especially when you go into hiring freelance helpers. And maybe this is something where we can segue into that, because I know you've worked with a lot of freelancers, and Nike was known for hiring freelancers. So managing that, basically, my question to you would be, what makes a good freelancer in that case?
Don't be a problem. it would be the best way to like overlay.
That's the slogan.
The slogan line is don't be a problem, which layers in through a bunch of stuff. Professionalism, for one. You're going to always be remembered by the last gig you did. That's the story, right? Mm-hmm. But you've got to be, as a freelancer, you have to be accessible and willing to do whatever needs to be done. I've had guys and gals be like, I won't do drape. Okay, well, then I may not bring you in for this, because this is everybody's, it's all hands gig. We're all going to be lifting and moving things. Deadlines, I have to leave at a certain point. I don't care. This is 8 events. This has no set time. This is going to start around here and it's going to end over here. We don't know how that's going to look. Part of how you make a good freelancer successful is you put them in the right role that's good for them. Mm-hmm. You may have somebody who is top rate at engineering something, but you put them in the hot seat to video op a show, that's not a good place for them. Mm-hmm. And you have to recognize where their skills lie and allow them to flourish in that, because you've hired them specifically for that. Yeah. You know, and there are some AV techs who are generalists, who touch on a whole bunch of a lot of stuff, and you hire them for just that too. The skill levels, as much as an AV tech wants to be like, well, I'm just an audio person. Well, okay, that may limit you for the amount of work you want to do, or it's going to really drive your work up because you're going to stay focused and drive that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, did you also, I mean, with Nike, I'm not sure how much they hired, you know, from like Yahtzee 52 and union freelancers. How did you deal with that?
Nike chose never to be a union house. So, that was never part of the deal. We would hire through the union, other companies like Acme and things like that would hire union stagehands to do work for us. Mm-hmm. And we would work with them all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the union folks are just very good at what they do. You have to make sure they're also them. For them, they're in the right roles doing the right things.
Yeah.
But we would partner with them all the time through other folks, but not like directly. Like I said, Nike was never going to be a union house.
I do remember, you know, a few instances where we would have union freelancers on the crew. And I mean, you had to go on their pace and you had to respect their breaks. And I mean, sometimes it was frustrating. Yeah. I have 2 more hours to doors and now is the right time for you to take your snack break. I'm like,
it's a little bit, they always want to make sure, you know, we got to make sure these AV techs can take a break. We got to make sure they get an hour break. Well, the moment the client goes on break and we think we can walk away for an hour, that's when the client wants to do something.
Yes, so, always.
You know, my whole thing was like, just feed the techs and give them someplace to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And they will do it all day. They love doing it all day. They're there for the long haul.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea of breaks, that doesn't exist in our world. It's, well, that's just a moment to go get a snack, come back because we got stuff to do. And we don't work normally that way. And union, that's how they go. You know, I've worked a lot of film too, and the union rates go up real fast when you start not giving them their break. But you also need to give them their breaks. Events are just weird. They're just, it's a weird atmosphere.
It is, yeah.
Ultimately, sometimes the break happens when the show finally starts and the tech can actually sit down.
Yeah, exactly. Or sometimes, you know, you have that hurry up and wait. Exactly.
Hurry up and wait is the film business for sure, because you're going to just hurry up and wait. But the moment it's your time, you got to go.
Yeah. Well, my next question is regarding, you know, events and shows, that as much as you did all your pre-event work and planning work, sometimes they just don't go according to plan. Surprise, surprise. It does happen occasionally. So in that case, how do you deal with that as an event producer? How do you deal with a maybe hypocritical client and maybe manager? Is that your dog?
That's my dog. I'm sorry. Like, I know she's a little loud.
Is it my dog? No, I don't have one.
No, I've got a Great Pyrenees and she barks at trucks and it's so all deliveries cute right now. Okay. Well, my wife might be able to quiet her down, but I doubt it at this point.
That's okay. We welcome all four-legged friends to our podcast.
Yeah.
I've had a few.
Yes. When events go sideways, I've done so many events in my life that you just at a certain point, as perfect and great as you think you're going to be, you're going to have a couple of duds. I tried my best not to throw up. Sometimes they're just going sideways and there's just no way out of them. I was calling a show once that just went sideways. Everybody around me had a major meltdown for some reason. Everybody, the client, the performers, the creatives, every one of the techs. And I just watched this thing and we're in the middle of the show. We got an audience in the house. So I'm just trying to drive it through, which is a lot of sort of terse words, formally, like a lot of, you know, kind of that, you know, and I don't like to really dwell on when things go wrong because I really strive as a producer to make sure the day of the event, honestly, if I did my job right, I'd have nothing to do that day. I would just be on red hot standby for what anybody needed. If I didn't do my job well and I had a run around awful day, that's on me. Because like I said, if I do my pre-work properly and I get all the ducks in a row to make all the pieces fit. And sometimes they don't all fit and you do have to do run around. And what I like to say is piss out fires, you know? So if you're done your job right, the day of the event, you should just be there and available to help anybody with anything at any level, whether that's taking something out of a back of a truck, whether that's help move some catering, whether that's checking mics with your sound person, you're just there and available. That's important. That's the most important thing, is to just be there and be available. And then at a certain point, it's all up and running and you don't need to be available when you can step back and let the event happen, which is also a big part of it too. At a certain point, you can't control how it's going to flow. It's just going to go and you're going to ride that wave of how it's going to move. Sometimes at Nike, we'd have more crowds than we would expect for something. Mm-hmm. So you'd not suddenly have to step in and ask people to leave rooms or deal with fire code and things, which was always awful, but
yeah,
because you had something really successful.
So let's go into the value of tech rehearsals in the context of events and the roles that as an event producer you play, because really it is your job as an event producer to be planning and thinking through as many details as possible in the pre-production process. But the tech rehearsal is when you really get to see and make those valuable adjustments to the event. And if things get, you know, headed in the wrong direction, you have the opportunity now to get them back on track. But I feel like it's up to the team and about the team and the tools that you have to help you respond well and quickly to those adjustments. So do you have any tips when it comes to adding value to your event with the tech rehearsals and even in the context of virtual event?
Well, sometimes you're beholden to a client and a budget, you know, that they were like, we can only afford this much. Clients don't understand the value of rehearsal. Even if you did a 15-minute, you know, check in with them an hour or two before, that would be most helpful. But people aren't scheduling their lives like this. People don't schedule rehearsal times. I think it becomes something you can start doing on the front end of it and set that expectation that we're going to want to do this an hour or two before, just to make sure we're aligned. You know, Nike was very good about, and they still are even with their video conferencing, is about the meeting leaders meeting an hour or half hour to begin the conference early, to begin it going. And because now you get on all these things now that are these presentations or what have you, and they're just, oh, hey, I dropped in, okay, this person's gonna be here in a little bit, waste of time kind of thing. So getting the key players on the call half hour, 45 minutes before gives you time a little bit for, you know, maybe the half hour before, and then look at your crew on an hour before. Again, I just don't think people see the value in it, because what happens is techs are amazing. The event staff is amazing. They pull it off, right? And then the client goes, see, we didn't need that rehearsal. And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
So we're a product of our own success in a way. It's not a rehearsal. We still pull off the magic.
Yeah, I think it's still important to insist on it, even with a team that's so proficient at what they do. I mean, yes, they've done the show hundreds of times. Yes, they've jumped through hoops and loops to make it happen. But wouldn't it be so much more relaxing if they actually knew what your goal is for this event and walked through those details in the tech rehearsal part, not just in a dress rehearsal, because sometimes there's also that confusion between like, well, how many rehearsals else do you need? It's like, you know, if you need to rehearse your speech before, you know, going live, you can call that your dress rehearsal and do it as many times as you need to. But for me, for that to be beneficial, I need to do a tech rehearsal where actually I run the levels for sound, make sure I get the compression right, the EQ, you know, is right.
Yeah, you've got
all those mistakes that I need to check as well, you know.
And you've got no control over them because they're in some venue, bedroom or an office or wherever they're at, you know. And so you've got no control over that, and you've got to get quality control on it. And that's the other thing, is understanding what quality control is about.
Yeah.
And setting that expectation early.
Yeah. So as an event producer, not only do you have to have a great communication style, but you also have to be a people's person. What would you say are the best producing management styles of being able to empower your team and efficiently communicate between clients, staff, and, you know, anything that has to do with supporting your team 100% so they know that you have their back?
A good sense of humor. You know, people want to be heard. And sometimes all you have to do is just listen and take that information to do whatever needs to be done. So giving everybody, all the key players, an opportunity to be heard is vitally important as you drive through it all. I say a good sense of humor for sure, just because this business is so thick and can be really tough and hard. Why make it harder than it needs to be? Listening. I don't think people listen enough. And when you do that, somebody said something that they just maybe got off their chest, and then they're better about it. Then they don't even care anymore.
Yeah.
That's just kind of how they operate. You know, I think there are a lot of people who will hold on to stuff and that's how they process it. And other people get rid of it immediately and then they're done with it, especially in stressful situations.
Yeah. I feel like I'm more of the second category. And then I completely forgot that I just like unloaded a bunch of stuff and I moved on. And then I would have, you know, people say, but this is how you felt about this. You know, like, that was like 5 minutes ago. I'm so over that right now.
Yeah, we're so over that way. And that's this business for sure. Like, you're going to get it out and move on. And so I always just like to be approachable. You got to be approachable. And funny enough, the story when you met me, you didn't feel like I was approachable, which was fine.
No, because I called you an ass. That's what I called you.
Absolutely. But I was. I played a role at that point. Like I was, that was, I needed to make sure walking into there that there were certain levels set. Yeah. And then when there were, then it was great. And I was done because you were wildly successful at what you're doing there. So that was even funnier for me where, you know, it kind of perceives, well, maybe he's being kind of an asshole. I was just having to look like I was still doing my job because there was really nothing for me to do. So, but that, again, that's that place. If I come into when I did road shows in various places around the country, you have to kind of come in kind of strong as a producer. You can't just be everybody's best buddy right at the get-go, because you're going to have to hold these people accountable for something. So there is a level of, I'm going to be your best buddy, but I'm also going to hold you highly accountable for what you're doing.
Because once I know that you're going to do your job right, and I already passed that point where I can trust you because you just demonstrated to me that you're serious about what you're doing and you care, then, hey, here's my fun side. I'm all ready for some jokes and having fun, but let's just make sure that work is work, and then the fun, you know, can definitely be integrated into it. But it's, definitely a balance. Like, you have to, you know, as an event producer, you have to be able to play there.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about personal well-being in this challenging year, but also the industry that has been completely turned upside down. How do you keep yourself taken care of mentally, you know, physically, whatever, spiritually? And also, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your project, because I know that's a huge part of what keeps you sane during this time. And
absolutely.
It was super exciting just to hear that you got that worked on. And it's a project that, and I'm not going to give any more details, I want you to talk about it, but it's something that you've been working on for many years.
Yeah. So 2020, I think for everybody, has really made them look inward, made you look at yourself and what you're about. Because I had left the corporate world and was going to freelance in events as I segued to the next chapter of what I wanted to be doing, I've watched events really disappear and realize for me, probably I'm not going to go back into that industry directly. I've always had a love of film and television, and I have a background in that. I've directed for Wieden and Kennedy and made a series of shorts recently about my life as an AV tech called Tex, which I'm sure you'll post a link somewhere. It's for absolutely for your audience. It's all insider event stuff. It's all based on true stuff. I've been working on it for 5 years, just got it wrapped up this year, and been putting that out there. And at the same time, beginning to prep a feature film that I'd like to do next year and really work on content storytelling and things like that. Mm-hmm. Plus, I acted in a couple of commercials this year. And so it's been kind of fun to just kind of play it a little loose this year. But it has given me the time to write a lot.
That's awesome.
And I need to be writing more. Writing's lonely and hard, but right now we're all generally kind of by ourselves. So might as well write. So, yeah.
So how do you center yourself then in that, you know, lonely place where sometimes it can be, you know, isolating?
I'm fortunate in that I am isolating here with my wife and my dog and my cat. So that kind of is good.
But it's not you alone on an island by yourself.
No, absolutely. And there are people who are alone in an island, which is that is very difficult. And if you're hearing this and you're alone on an island, give me a call. I'll talk to you anytime. But we're nearing the end of this, you know, vaccines coming out and the ability to hopefully gather in groups again, people that core to our to our livelihood of interpersonal contact. I like being quiet sometimes, just sitting in quiet and letting the real what thoughts come into your head first. Meditation that way every day.
Yeah,
I try to create a little bit of structure sometimes, you know, through all of this because I'm obviously schedule oriented, being the kind of person I am. It's like, okay, I need to read for a little bit. I need to sit for a little bit. I need to exercise for a little bit. And some days
do you put that
all
in your calendar? Like I do. I'm like, this
no. I almost started doing that, tracking what I've done. But it's just on a list, just a little hashtag, little piece of paper that just says, do these things every day to remind myself. Because listen, I love making lists and checking things off a list. Come on. If anything, that's what's gotten me through the COVID's making lists and just checking things off. Because I am goal-oriented. I am schedule-oriented. So obviously, this pandemic has slowed everything down a little bit for me, but that's good. It gives me more time and more opportunity. I've been doing a lot of conferencing on Zoom lately, and obviously these kind of things has opened my network quite a bit. Yeah. Zoom meetings with people you don't know, it's the best thing. I met some awesome people in just chat rooms and various meetups. So there's a way to reach out, and that's what people should just be doing at this point, because soon we'll all be back together. And
we'll probably still do some Zoom meetings.
Oh, absolutely. This hasn't gone away by any stretch, but I mean, I'm about to start a writing process with a writing partner, and he's in Chico, California, and I'm in Portland, Oregon. So I know we're going to do a bunch of Zooms, but I have a feeling like we're going to have to meet up at some point. You can only do so much, you know, for the TV.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, team, it was so good talking to you and getting a little bit more into event producer role. And for the audience that is listening right now, where are the best places for them to find you and interact with you and engage with you?
Look me up on LinkedIn is probably the best way to get in contact with me. Text right now is on YouTube. Just type in T-E-C-H-S. Text should come up. I don't know how long it's going to be there for free. I may move it to a different place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that. Probably in Facebook and Instagram. I don't know. I mean, right now the Facebook is bridging everything, and Instagram very much is sort of personal. LinkedIn has sort of exploded, and I really have been liking that for a way to contact and connect with people.
Yeah. So, absolutely. Well, thank you for this time.
Thank you.
I know we're recording this before the holidays to be actually aired after the holidays. So just between me and you, happy holidays.
Happy holidays, definitely.
When this aired, you can confirm that it was actually a happy holiday or not.
Yeah, well, I think we'll be okay. I think we're doing better. I think we're entering an age of enlightenment and light and air, and I think we'll be good.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Awesome. You're welcome.
Okay, friends, this is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and make sure to check out the links posted in the episode's notes, including the links to tags. Watch this short film of behind the scene of the people behind the scene while it's still available to watch for free. Do subscribe to stay tuned for our next episode in February, where we get to talk with Ashley Hawks, the amazing leader behind Forever Bride, now slaying the virtual and hybrid events at ITCOM while empowering and supporting organizations and businesses in this new format of event. I welcome your feedback, so keep that coming either via direct messaging on Instagram or Facebook or via email at podcast@refundevents.com.
Have a fabulous rest of your day. Until next time.